You're listening to Feathers, a podcast of stories about God speaking and his people having just enough faith to believe him and obey. I hope these stories inspire you and encourage you to take flight in your own faith. I'm your host, Amy Bennett, and this is Season 5, Episode 6. Well, hey, friends, and welcome to Feathers this week. Today, I have Jenny Simmons. You might know Jenny from when she was the lead singer of the band Addison Road. She's also a mom and a blogger. She recently released a book which is based off of Jesus' question, "Do you want to be made well?" She talks about the struggles she's had physically and emotionally in her life and how God has used everything from medicine to everyday moments to heal her and make her well. And through her story, we can be aware of ways that God is healing us, maybe in ways that we don't even recognize yet. So let's go ahead and jump into my conversation with Jenny. Hey, Jenny, and welcome to Feathers today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that you're here. How about we start off and you can introduce yourself and your family and your new little one in your family?
Okay. So, well, my name's Jenny Simmons, and I'm from Texas, but I live in Nashville, Tennessee. But I'm still a proud Texan. I'm that girl. So, I've been married to my husband for almost, we're going on 15 years. His name is Ryan, and we have two little girls. Annie is in second grade, and then we just had our second daughter 10 days ago. Her name is Lucy.
Congratulations. And we were just chatting before we got on, and I was just sharing that my nephew and Lucy are just one day apart. So,
yay.
Babies all around.
Woo. Babies all around. Actually, I got to the hospital, and it was a lovely experience. So I got there, and it took about 20 minutes for somebody to be able to walk me upstairs to where the labor and delivery unit was, because they were that full in the lobby. And then I get upstairs, and they were like, "By the way, there are no rooms." And I was like,
"Oh my gosh."
I was like, "What?" And this nurse thought it was really funny. She was like, "Yeah, I guess all Nashville had snow babies." And I was like, "Lady, I am having contractions every 4 minutes."
Oh my gosh. So this wasn't a planned thing. Like, you were like literally in labor and trying to get in a room.
Yes. And she was like, there's nothing open. So I was like, "Oh my gosh, it's been fun."
Oh my gosh. So how long did you have to wait for a room?
Well, it didn't end up being that bad, because finally they reached out and they found my midwife, and they were like, "Well, you know, she's 35 years old. She's had a C-section before, so she's kind of a high-risk patient. We've got to get her into a place." So I guess after the age of 35, you're old in their book.
Right. Yeah, my sister's 36. So
okay.
Yeah, she was in the high-risk category too.
Yes, apparently we are high-riskers. So us high-riskers get rooms. So actually, it wasn't even on the labor and delivery unit. They put us somewhere else, but they were like, "It's a room." And I was like, "I will take it. It's better than the lobby." So apparently a lot of us had babies last weekend.
Wow. Just throw out the tour where you get to see all the rooms and everything. They're just going to stick you where they can put you. Oh, my goodness. So how did the births go? How long were you in labor? If you don't mind me asking. Goodness.
Oh, yeah. No. Gosh, no, not at all. Actually, okay, so it wasn't the most ideal birth ever, but I'm not one of those women that like has a lot of like dreams planted in my birth story. And so I guess if it's going to happen to somebody, it should happen to me. But I got there, and they, my water had broken like in the afternoon. And, you know, by the time I got to the hospital, it was like 1 a.m. And they were like, "Actually, your water didn't break." And I was like, "Well, actually it did. I promise you." I, you know,
yeah,
you
can't miss that. Yeah. My water broke. Like, you can't mistake that, I don't think.
Yeah. So it was really kind of, it was just this very frustrating experience, because I was like, "What do you mean I am telling you, I just didn't know I needed to bring evidence, but it for sure broke." And so anyways, that went on for a while. They didn't even know if they were going to admit me, because they were like, "You know, we can't prove that it broke." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I cannot believe this is happening." And then they finally checked me, and they were like, "Sweetie, you're dilated about the size of a pinky." And I was like, "What?" Yeah. So we couldn't use any extra medicine or anything, because of my previous C-section. So we just waited till about 9 or 10 the next morning, and I still, there was no progress at all. And we were coming up on the 24-hour mark of the water breaking. So they were like, "We can keep trying and start giving you antibiotics, or you can just opt for a C-section." So I went for a C-section.
Yes. Okay. So yeah. The antibiotics, would that have been for you and the baby?
Yeah, I think it would have been for me and the baby, just because I guess once the water is broken for, 24 hours, they start worrying about infection for the mom.
Yeah.
And because there was just no progress, they're like, we can't even find your cervix. And I was like, what do you mean? You can't.
It's not good to hear.
No, not at all. And so, and I was using a midwife through the hospital, and she said, if you really, really, really want this to be a VBAC, like we can do, there's measures we can take, but she said, I think it's going to be 24 hours at least. And there's just no promise it's going to work because of your previous history. So, she left and let us think about it for a few minutes, but then I was so exhausted. I was like, let's just get this over with.
Yes.
So there it was. So the recovery is a little bit more slow than I would like. But it is what it is. I have a healthy little baby girl. So I guess that's all that matters.
That is. That's all that's important. That's so good. And I just love that little name, Lucy May.
Yeah.
So Southern.
It is. It is.
So cute. Okay. Well, I'm going to get you on your way so you can get back to your little baby. But I do want to spend some time tonight talking about your new book, Made Well. And first, we didn't do as part of your introduction, but some people might know you from the music world. So tell us a little bit about that too.
Yeah, totally. So my husband and I started a band in college called Addison Road. And we did that for about 11 years together, so traveled all over the country. And some people might not know that I write, but they know songs like Hope Now or What Do I Know of Holy or This Little Light of Mine. And we did that for 11 years and absolutely loved it, and wrapped that up about 5 years ago. And so since then I do a lot of like women's conferences. I speak and lead worship and sing, and then have written these books.
Right. So, let's get into Made Well. I just have to say, first off, that I read a lot of books because of this podcast, and this book is one of my favorites of this year.
Wow.
And yeah, it's so good. I don't know. I was trying to like come up with the words to figure out how to describe why I loved it so much, but I sort of just, I don't know. You're such a wonderful storyteller. It just moved so well, and it's very kind of vulnerable kind of book where you put yourself out there, but it's in a good way to where you can identify with it in your own struggles.
Good. So, perfect.
Yes. So, okay. So it's called Made Well, and it talks about finding wholeness in the everyday sacred moments. So I want to start talking, kind of at the beginning. You say that you have, and that we all have, a holy syndrome. H-O-L-E-Y, holy syndrome. Talk about what that means to you.
I think it means that we're all riddled with holes. I mean, I think one of my biggest fears for writing this book, and I wrestle through my books a lot with my husband, so I'll reference him a lot, but he would say, like, Jen, you don't want people to think this is just a book for people that are fighting cancer or walking through death or something. And he's like, you've got to find a way to make sure that everybody knows this is for everyone. And I started thinking about all the different ways that we experience pain and suffering in our lives. And the fact is, like, we don't even need death to take us there. We have plenty of holes on our own. And so for me, the chapter is holy, 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 but it's H-O-L-E-Y. And I look at myself and I can see the holes, that from things in childhood or things in relationships or finances, those little moments in life that leave their marks on you, that if you leave them alone, you let them just like fester and go untouched and unhealed, they can really grow into something big that starts to take over and consume. And so those are those things inside each one of us that they're not whole yet. They're not well. They're holy in the sense of like, they're those things inside of us that are broken.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that you talk about, and I love the name of this chapter, Half-Baked Miracles, is that so many times we have an incorrect view of what healing looks like. You say that it looks one-dimensional, and we're always looking for it really a form of physical, in the physical realm. So talk about that and what healing means to you, and what that incorrect kind of view of healing looks like.
Yeah. I think since we were like I grew up in the church since I was a little bitty girl, and I think we have this like sort of distorted view that what healing is that we confuse it with a cure. And so it's not, it's healing is when it's all made better and all fixed. And the thing that for me that began to sort of eat away at that is that I spent, you know, a decade on the road singing these songs over people. And then I would get to the table at the end of the night to sign autographs, and I would listen to people and their stories. And so many times, I mean, yes, I absolutely saw plenty of miracles and plenty of people that were being healed and made well. But there were so many times that I just held somebody as they cried and said, I prayed that God would heal this person or cure this thing. And it didn't happen the way we thought it was going to happen. And so to hear the stories of people who they lose their kids, their son overdoses, they lose their marriages, their finances, and they're walking these roads they never thought they'd have to walk. For me, I began to think, what does it look like then for those people to experience healing, even after the miracle they prayed for didn't happen? And I remember thinking too, it's so crazy, because I remember specifically thinking multiple times, gosh, I wonder what that's like to really pray and beg the Lord for something and not see it come to pass. And for me, this book is, it begins with my own story, our own family story of when we actually had to walk through that. And then I realized, oh, this is what it's like to pray for God to heal something and to not see it happen the way we thought it was going to. And this is what healing looks like on the other side.
Right. So share a little bit about that, because a lot of your, you know, stories among the book is wrapped around this tragic event in your family. So talk a little bit about what you guys experienced.
Yeah. So my little sister was had just a lot of problems with her pregnancies and had miscarried several times. And then they had a healthy baby girl and decided that was it. They were going to adopt. And so they began the adoption process and were waiting to be placed with a child when they found out they were pregnant. And then a few weeks later, we found out it was with twins and they were baby girls. And Sarah had a really strange complication that we'd never heard of before. Her water broke at 17 weeks, which should have ended their lives in the pregnancy, but it didn't. And so she stayed pregnant. The girls kept growing, and they lived to 23 weeks. And then Sarah woke up really sick one day, and the doctors, we rushed her to the hospital, and they basically said, you know, it's somebody is not going to make it through today, and we're just trying to keep your sister alive. And the girls each lived for a few minutes and passed away in my sister's arms.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, me too. It was one of those moments I remember just being in the hospital, just thinking, God, how do you walk out of something like this? You know, like, how do I even get up and go back into normal life after you watch these two little girls pass away? It was such a changing moment for me, because it was the moment that I realized, that we are begging God for this cure, for this like grand miracle, and it didn't happen. And yet, in the same breath, and I don't say this clichely or as like a super spiritual superhero, but all I can say is that God met us in that hospital room, and he has carried us in so many miraculous, beautiful ways, big and small, inconsequential and completely mind-blowing, over the past 2 years, that it's opened my eyes to realize that even if the cure doesn't happen, healing happens all the time, because our God is at work healing us, whether the brokenness of the world is fixed or not.
Mm, yes. And so this book, I would say that kind of sets up, you know, you've experienced this tragic event. You have other emotional, physical, you know, holes, if
yeah.
you will, in your life, and that we all do. I mean, really, mm-hmm. We don't get by in this life without some sort of hole.
Right.
and hurt and pain. But then you spend the rest of the book really digging into what does that look like to find healing in the everyday moments when, you know, it doesn't turn out the way that you really want it to. And I have to go down a little tangent here. One of your chapters is called Slow Dancing, and it's and it's really about that healing can happen in any place. And we can talk about that. But you talk about Radnor Lake. So so are you friends with Annie Downs by any chance?
Well, so we know each other, but we don't like hang out. But she loves Radnor Lake almost as much as I do, I think.
Okay, because I had Annie, I had Annie on the podcast, and then I went to her Looking for Lovely Weekend in Nashville a couple months ago. And we went to Radnor Lake. So I just was there a couple months ago, and so I couldn't believe it when I read it in the book. I was like, oh my goodness, I know what she's talking about.
That's so fun. And you know what? Actually, there's so many people that walk it that are artists and stuff. I brush into people all the time, but my favorite is when I accidentally run into Lisa Harper. Because Lisa just, she's, if you've spent any time with her or listened to her online, she's loud. She's just laughing and praying and talking out loud to the Lord. You can hear her on a different trail. You'll be like, there's Lisa praying her way through the woods.
Oh my goodness. That's funny. Well, it's beautiful there. I can vouch for that. It's just very green. That's what I remember of it. Well, gosh, I was in there in the summer, but, yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yes. So there must be something special at Radnor Lake in Nashville, people. This is the second time we've talked about it. So let's go back to the chapter that you talk about this. It's really called Slow Dancing, and you talk about Radnor Lake. So, you know, you ask the question, where do you go to be made well, to breathe deeply, listen for God's voice, and know his peace? So what does this have to do, you know, with being made well?
You know, I think so. For me, for the longest time, I would get really jealous. Like, I would look at people's Facebook feeds and be like, well, of course you can be made well because you get to take 3-week vacations to your private beach house down in wherever. I'm like, God, if I could go do that, I would be well too. I'd be healthy and, you know, all this stuff. And so I had this idea in my head that, like, I had to go somewhere exotic or beautiful, or even I'd read books, you know, by other authors, like they're making these trips to monasteries and it's all these things they're finding, you know, about their life and stuff in a monastery. And I'm like, you know what, but what happens if you have jobs and kids and a husband? And like, I can't just drop everything and go to a monastery. And the Lord really began to work in my heart and tell me, like, do you not know that I can make you well no matter where you are? And because you have these great lofty ideas about what it looks like all these ramifications, like you have to have these prerequisites in order to experience healing. You don't actually experience healing because you never have a chance to get all those things in order. And so it began this journey, this like conversation between me and God of like, you know, there are other places that you can go to be made well. And it's more often than not in your backyard and in your living room and at your kitchen table and on the car ride and as you're sitting in the line at Starbucks. And so for me, a huge part of my journey, probably the last 10 years or so, has been what I call like holy awareness, is asking God to grow in me a holy awareness of his presence no matter where I am, because I think if I can stop and connect and tap into that, then I can begin to experience healing here and now. And it doesn't have to be at the beach or a mountain resort. It can be every single day in these like very mundane, simple moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can vouch for that. And it's so interesting reading this book. I think I connected a lot with this book because I feel like, especially the last 2 years in my personal life, I've been kind of on a healing journey. And I mean, I can just say that some of the most important work and the most healing that God did with me is laying across my daughter's bed in her bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was not exotic. It was just me, you know, leaving the living room where everybody was and knowing that God had something to say to me and just throwing myself on her bed and talking to him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I talk about in the book how, my birthday last year, I don't know what it was about it. I was turning 35 and we had no plans really. We came home that night. It was like a weeknight. And so my husband made chicken spaghetti because it's my favorite. And Annie decorated this cake. But when it was all done, she told me she had a gift for me. And we sat in the living room and she just danced. She ran back to her room, put on her ballet outfit, came back out. And she just asked Dad to turn on classical music and she just danced. And I just sat there. And for some reason in that moment, like it was this overwhelming sense of peace and gratitude that came over me. And I felt like God was just like, look what you have. Like, and it was something about that moment, just the simplicity of my family. And I don't know, I don't even have the right words for it, except to say that, like, in that moment, something was being made well in me. Something was healing and being shored up. And it was just happening in my living room.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Yeah. That was a great birthday present.
Yeah, it really was.
Inner healing for birthday.
Inner healing. Good win.
Right. So one of my favorite stories that you tell on the book, because, you know, on this podcast, we're talking about, you know, taking leaps of faith and just following the Holy Spirit and just, you know, being obedient to what God calls mm-hmm. you to. And I think the story that you tell in the closet, and you're really talking about that the healer is at work behind the scenes, you know, when we don't know it. And some of this healing is, you know, that God is just busy and at work, even though, you know, we might not even realize it. So you tell the story about you going to a church. I don't want to spoil any of it, and you're so much better. So you, if you don't mind, tell us the story about if you recall which one I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely, totally. It was like the weirdest moment in my life because I thought I had gone crazy, which I think is like a hallmark sign of if you're following the Holy Spirit,
right?
You start to do it and you're like, I have lost my ever loving mind.
Yeah, that's a good sign. You're on the right path.
Right, exactly. So this was my sister called and she texted the family and just said, hey, would you pray for Ray? That's her husband. One of his good friends from seminary, we just found out, was murdered. And he was a pastor at a church in Arlington, Texas. And he was murdered at the church. And I didn't know him, but I knew my brother-in-law and I knew a lot of people that had gone to school with him. And so all I can say is that as the day progressed, like, it was being picked up on the news stations, it was all over the place in Dallas. And we just had a lot of friends who were deeply affected by it. So I've seen it on Facebook and I've seen it on Twitter. And the more I saw, the more like grieved I was for his family. And he was a newlywed, had just been married. And anyways, I tried to go to sleep that night and I could not sleep to save my life. And I just kept feeling this overwhelming need to really intercede for his family. And for me to even say that out loud sounds crazy because intercessory prayer is like not my spiritual gift. I can tell you maybe five times where I felt like the Holy Spirit was like, you need to get up and go pray for this person, like intentionally and do nothing else. But this was one of those times. And so it's like probably 1 a.m. I go in my closet and I just began to pray for this family that God would send them somebody to comfort them, that he'd walk with the church, you know, those kind of things. And I felt like the Holy Spirit's, it sounds so crazy to even tell it out loud, but I felt like the Holy Spirit was telling me to reach out to the church and offer to sing. And I remember when the thought crossed my mind, I was like, nope, I'm delirious. It's like 3 a.m. now. That was not the Holy Spirit. That was me coming up with some crazy idea. I'm not going to reach out to this church and offer to sing, 3 days after their pastor's been murdered in their building. But the voice did not go away. It was insistent. And by about 6 o'clock that morning, I started feeling sick. I was still in my closet and I was feeling sick over it. Like, I think I'm going to have to do this. You know, I think I'm going to have to. Yeah.
Not do it. It's, you know, when it gets like that, it's like you can't not do it. Like, can't go on. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, we're dumb. We're like Jonah. At least I am. You know, and so I'm. It's like, Lord's calling me to Nineveh. And I'm like, no, yeah. Let me jump in. I will run away the opposite direction. And so I finally emailed the church. I gave in and just said, hey, I know it sounds crazy, but I'm a musician and I'm in town. And if you need somebody to be at your church on Sunday morning to help with music, I'd be happy to do that. The music minister wrote back and he said, oh my gosh, it's great to hear from you. Clint was a big fan of your music. He had just gone to one of our concerts at the arena there. And he said, why don't you come and sing your song Hope Now over our congregation? And then you can be on standby just in case I can't get through the rest of the set if I get too emotional. So long story short, I show up, I sing the song, I leave. I don't know why I did it. My husband thinks I'm crazy. And then several weeks later, I get an email from the pastor's brother. So the young man who was murdered, his brother wrote, and he said, I don't know if anybody's told you this story yet or not, but I want to make sure you know what a profound thing it was for you to show up and sing over our family on Sunday morning. And he went on to say that several years ago, his sister had walked through a really tough season with pregnancy, and she was worried about her daughter and got in the car one day with the mom, and our song Hope Now had come on the radio, and they were so moved by it, and it became sort of their family song that they all went to the jewelry store. They went to James Avery, had necklaces made.
Oh my goodness.
That said Hope Now. And they wore these necklaces, and she would listen to the song every day of her pregnancy. And it just sort of became their anthem as a family. Like, this is what we're clinging to, is this message behind the song. And so she said, his sister said, you know, when I found out Clint was murdered, I just put my headphones on. I turned on my song, which is Hope Now. And I just ran and ran and ran. And so the family said, when I showed up that Sunday morning, they were like, when you showed up, and you opened your mouth and you began to sing, it was like God said to us, like, I have not forgotten you. I see you. I know you. I know the grief that you're walking through, and I've sent her to you, to sing these words over you, because this is your song. This is for your family. And I want you to know that you're seen and that you're known. And for them to just have that moment, was, I don't know, you can't make that kind of stuff up. And for them, it was a very, very profound part of their journey. And for me too, to sit back and think, wow, this is what happens when you actually act upon what the Holy Spirit whispers to you, even if it sounds crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's my heartbeat. That gives me chills. I mean, I already knew what was going to happen. It still gives me chills. I love at the end of this chapter, you said the healer is ever at work, even in the most painful moments when we see no glimpses of God's presence in the evil commiserating to still kill and destroy around us. Even then, he is behind the scenes rescuing and redeeming. And I think, number one, it's a message that, you know, do the things that the Holy Spirit is calling you to do. But two, in these painful times, even when things don't go the way we want them to go, that we do have a healer at work.
Right. Absolutely. I think that sometimes it's maybe easy to forget, because like I said earlier, we have these great grand ideas that, you know, well, God should have stopped that murder from happening, or the baby should have lived. Like, we have these ideas like, God, this is how we want you to fix it. This is what we want the miracle to look like. And when it doesn't look like that, we can sort of forget that just because that didn't happen doesn't mean that God's just like twiddling his thumbs doing nothing. It means that he's healing in ways that we can't even imagine, that we can't even dream up yet, that we don't even comprehend, that he's still at work. It just might look a little bit different than what we thought.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking about, like, I don't know, for me it's like, if the murder would have never happened, and I'm not saying that this is a good enough reason for it not to happen or happen or whatever, but like, you wouldn't have even known that he would have protected him from that, right? I mean, most likely. But in this, it's like you look at that and goes, like, there's no way that you can say that was not God.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you think about it, it's like he in a lot of ways got a lot of glory from it happening. Absolutely. And then being able to walk through that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Goodness. So, I have like 8 more things, but goodness, we're running out of time. So let's see here. I think it's important. I want to talk about, your chapter on receiving gifts and what receiving gifts has to do with being made well.
That chapter was hard for me because it's not always easy for me to receive gifts. Okay. So if we're going to be made well, I think that is not a solo process. It's not a game that I can do by myself, and it's not a journey that I can make by myself. And so if that's the case, if healing requires community and people and somebody other than just me relying on me and God, then I think I have to be the kind of person that can welcome people's gifts into my life. And so, So I think it has everything to do with healing, because healing is just, it's not something that we do by ourselves. And so, for me, that chapter was like this reminder that, a lot of my healing is going to happen when I set my pride down and I let people step into the mess of my life. Even right now, even as a new mom, like, it's so crazy. When Annie was born, we got pretty much right back on the road and we're touring really quickly after she was born. But this time we're kind of here hanging out and people have been bringing us food every night, which is amazing. But it's hard. Like, I see them walking up to my door and I'm like, oh, there's something in me that feels like they shouldn't be taking care of me. Yeah. They shouldn't be taking care of my family and gifting us with like these extravagant meals and gifts and things like that. And yeah, it's like what the Lord's called us to do is rest in community and let each other carry each other's burdens. And so part of even just my physical healing right now is being able to lay on the couch and let a girlfriend bring a casserole over and take care of me in that way. And I think we have to become men and women who allow each other to take care of one another, because there's healing to be found when we invite somebody else into the story. And I think so often we don't invite people into the story till it looks better on the other side. But then we miss out on, well, some really good casseroles. But we miss out on what it looks like to have just another friend's touch or voice or wisdom in the midst of our suffering.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. And I think, I don't know, I think in the social media world that we're in, it's so difficult to make that a reality. And I know, and not just social media world, I know because I have 3 kids and you have little ones. I mean, it's just hard to even find the time to be with people to be vulnerable enough to let them in.
It is. And so I think that's something that we actually have to like be very intentional and mindful about. Like, I will mindfully, even I have a girlfriend that just moved to town and she's a massage therapist and she keeps saying, hey, I know you don't have tons of money, but I just want to give you massages for free during your pregnancy. And I really resisted for like seven weeks until I pulled something in my back and I was like, I have to have a massage now. And I just kind of cried through the first one, like a basket case, crazy-o. And I just sat there thinking like, why didn't I welcome this earlier? Like, my body needed this. My body was exhausted. And I didn't welcome it because there's so many issues of like, of just feeling like we should be able to take care of it ourselves and we don't need other people. But even Jesus modeled like what it looks like to lean on other people.
Right. Right. And have the oil put on him and being honored. And well, I think too, when we don't receive these gifts, we rob ourselves. We also rob the people of being able to use their gifts and talents for us.
Yes. You know. Yep. Absolutely.
So, okay. Well, I just love this book, and there's 40 other different stories that I wish I could just hear from you directly, but I want people to go pick up this book because I just absolutely love it. So how can people connect with you online and get the book?
Yeah. So you can get the book anywhere, you know, books are sold, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Lifeway. I think it's still like under $9 on Amazon. So that's kind of where we head people to. And then connecting on Facebook or Instagram is just at Jenny Simmons Music. And I love being on Facebook. We post lots of pictures of kids, of our babies and doing life together and all kinds of stuff. So we'd love for people to join us there.
Yes, please do. Okay, Jenny. Well, thanks so much for spending time with me in the midst of new mommyhood again. So,
yay. Absolutely.
Best of luck with Miss Lucy and Annie and everybody. So thanks
perfect.
Again.
Thank you, Amy.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jenny. I think this topic of healing and being made well is so important because when we don't get healing and we're stuck in these painful places, it's really going to hold us back in the things God has planned for us. You know, it's hard to live brave and live free when you are stuck in a cycle of pain. So we really want to go to God for him to heal us. And I love the reminders that Jenny gave us. One is that the healer is at work behind the scenes. So don't lose hope. It may not seem that he's there because he's allowing some of these terrible things in our lives. But do not lose hope. He is working behind the scenes to redeem and to heal. But also, for those of you who may not be going through kind of a healing process, follow the leadings of God that he has for us. I mean, this is what this whole podcast is about, because it might be that we can be instrumental in someone else's healing. The other reminder I loved is that healing can happen anywhere. Most of my main healing places have been in my own house, in my daughter's bedroom, in my closet, in my office. You know, it hasn't happened, you know, like she said, on some remote island on vacation. It's right in my house. God is right there with you, Mom, as you wash dishes, as you fold laundry, as you tuck your kids in bed, as you're driving your kids around again, or you visit with God right in your closet. He is there, and he can make you well. All right, guys, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week on Feathers.